This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Gunfire erupted early Monday morning in Khartoum as protesters say security forces attempted to clear their almost two-month sit-in around military headquarters.
That's VOA's Faith Lapidus on the deadly crackdown on pro-democracy protesters in Sudan's capital. Details next. Also, Algeria's Constitutional Council has cancelled the July 4th presidential election after rejecting the candidates. And after a weekend explosion caused the shutdown of the facility, Cameroon has increased troops around its lone oil refinery. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story: heavy gunfire erupted in Sudan's capital as security forces closed off streets and attempted to clear protesters from a two-month sit-in calling for democracy. At least 13 people are reported killed and many injured. Witnesses say the protest site has been cleared. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said he was alarmed by reports of gunfire, while the UN Human Rights Chief deplored the violence. Both the United States and British embassies have expressed concern over the situation. Nava Mohadin reports from Khartoum.
The casualties came after gunfire erupted early Monday morning in Khartoum as protesters say security forces attempted to clear their almost two-month sit-in around military headquarters. The Sudanese Professionals Association, the main protest group, accused the military of staging a coup against them and vowed more protests and nationwide strikes. Protester Mohamed Abbas is a member of the SPA.
This is a massacre executed by the military council, he says. They lost their patience after 53 days, says Abbas, showing that it's a coup.
This is a massacre executed by the transitional military council with planning from the camps opposing the nation's revolution, he says. Protester Abu Anas witnessed the attack. A big group from the Rapid Support Forces attacked us in the sit-in area, he says. They then surrounded the army headquarters buildings and gates. There was no army, says Abu. We were attacked by a huge force with live ammunition. There were many casualties. We moved to the borough area now and we're surrounded, he says. Thousands of protesters responded Monday by blocking roads and burning tires in parts of the capital. Sudan's transitional military council was set up in April after the army overthrew longtime President Omar al-Bashir. The council has agreed in principle to share power with civilians, but talks on forming a transitional government have stalled. The TMC said the raid on the protest camp targeted criminal elements near the protest site and that the protesters themselves were safe. Shams Eldin Kabashi is a spokesman for the TMC. He says the area next to the protesters' sit-in, in front of the army headquarters, is well known as a focus for many negative attitudes. They threaten the safety and security of Khartoum citizens, he says. Despite the violence, the TMC said ongoing talks between the military and protest leaders on a transitional government were expected to continue later Monday or Tuesday. But Sudan's opposition and protest groups denied talks were possible after the violence. In a statement, they said they were halting all contact and negotiations with the military. The raid on the protest camp was not unexpected. A military statement last Thursday had called the sit-in a threat to national security. The United States Embassy in Khartoum on Monday condemned the violence. In a tweet, the embassy said Sudanese security forces' attacks against protesters and other civilians is wrong and must stop. Responsibility, it read, falls on the Transitional Military Council. For Naba Mohideen in Khartoum, Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Meanwhile, Sudanese security forces halted a protest by journalists demanding freedom of the press in central Khartoum yesterday after authorities shut down the office of Qatar state broadcaster Al Jazeera last week. Just hours later, troops moved in to clear a weeks-long sit-in of protesters demanding the military hand power to a civilian authority. Jason Patinkin reports from Khartoum.
Just seconds after Sudanese journalists unfurled banners for freedom of the press Sunday, a pickup truck of troops with a mounted machine gun arrived to shut down the protest. Despite the rally taking place on a public street, an officer with the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, said the area was a military zone and that filming was prohibited. The officer threatened to arrest the journalists if they did not leave the area and singled out a foreign reporter who was covering the rally as one who would be placed in handcuffs. Shamaya Al-Nur, a columnist for Al-Tayar newspaper, said it was impossible to convince the RSF to allow the protest. With the RSF, she said, there's no negotiations, there's no common language with these forces. If you try to speak to them, they won't understand, said Nur. So wisdom dictates that you just leave the place, she said, because they might just attack you immediately. The RSF, which has been accused of leading attacks on protesters, are showing that they are the ones in control of Khartoum, says Noor. Even the way their soldiers speak, they're trying to tell us that they're in control, she said. They will do the banning of things. They will give permissions, said Noor. Basically, they're trying to say, we are the government. The RSF's actions, says Noor, remind her of the way former President Omar al-Bashir ran things, by force. The military ousted Bashir in April, but has been beset since by thousands of protesters at a massive sit-in demanding they hand power to civilians. After the Rapid Support Forces stopped their protest Sunday, the journalists moved it behind the sit-in's makeshift barricades, where the RSF has not been allowed to enter. The Sudanese Journalists Network's Adil Ibrahim said they organized the protest in response to the military last week, ordering the closing of Qatari state broadcaster Al Jazeera's Khartoum office without a stated reason.
In the last 3 weeks in Khartoum, we dropped down in the field of freedom of speech and journalist rights. We think it is a crime against their rights to work, the rights of freedom of speech, and I think it is a very, very, very bad decision. We think the right of speech is not covered just a journalist, it's covered all the people in the republic.
The Sudanese Journalists Network is part of an alliance of professional organizations that has led the demonstrations since April against military rule. Ibrahim said that in the last 3 weeks, Sudanese radio stations and newspapers have been censored on certain topics, such as corruption and the transitional military council that replaced Bashir. He said the media clampdown appeared to be a prelude to the RSF's violent attacks on the sit-in as talks between the military and protest leaders have stalled. The military on Thursday declared the protest in central Khartoum a threat to public safety, and early Monday morning the RSF raided the protest site, with many casualties reported. With violence increasing and freedom of the press under attack, many Sudanese fear what few freedoms they have gained from their revolution are at risk of slipping away. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Algeria's Constitutional Council canceled the July 4th presidential election after rejecting the candidates. The council said in a statement yesterday that temporary president Abdelkader Bensalah must set a new date for the vote. Only two candidates presented documents to the government by the May 25th deadline, but they were rejected. The council did not give a reason. The French news agency said neither candidate had been expected to receive enough voter signatures to validate their application. On April 2nd, longtime President Abdelaziz Bouteflika stepped down following weeks of protests. Citizens have called for new leadership. With Bouteflika's departure, a new presidential vote was required. Bensalah became interim president for a 90-day period that will end in the second week of July. However, a council statement said organizing elections was part of the interim president's essential mission, suggesting he may remain in office beyond the time limit. Army Chief of Staff Ahmed Gaid Salah has called for protesters and interim leaders to compromise and engage in talks to ensure that the presidential election will be held as soon as possible. Cameroon has increased troops around its lone oil refinery after a weekend explosion caused the shutdown of the facility. The government denies separatist fighters were responsible and says there will be no shortages of petroleum products. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Yaounde.
15 women are trying to buy cooking gas from a supplier in Cameroon's capital, Yaounde. Among them is 21-year-old Christine Enanga, who worries that in days ahead, she may not be able to find the commodity.
I came to buy 4 bottles of gas, but they told me they could not sell 4, that they could only sell 2, because other people are buying, and I know there will be serious cases in Cameroon.
Drivers are also buying and stocking fuel. The scare was sparked after a storage tank exploded Saturday night at Cameroon's only oil refinery in town of Limbe in the southwest region. The blast caused a fire that damaged parts of the refinery and shut down output. No lives were lost. Cameroon's Trade Minister, Luc Magwambarga Atangana, says there will be no shortages and no price increases of petroleum products.
Je voudrais tout de suite rassurer les populations, rassurer.
He says Cameroon, 2 years ago, found itself in a similar difficult situation when the national refinery shut down its doors for 8 months for rehabilitation and shortages in supply were minimal because they increased imports without increasing prices. He says people should remain calm and should not be scared. Rebels fighting to separate the English-speaking parts of Cameroon from the Francophone majority claimed responsibility for the explosion on social media. They said the refinery was attacked because English speakers benefit very little from the company. Government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says proceeds from the company are used to develop all of Cameroon. He refutes the explosion was carried out by secessionist fighters and says early investigations indicate it was an accident.
Les premiers éléments d'information dont nous disposons à ce stade convergent vers.
He says details of the accident that blew up parts of the refinery will be made public soon, and that the military has also been deployed to make sure the refinery and its equipment are totally protected. The refinery, which is almost entirely state-owned, supplies 2.2 million tons of crude a year to Cameroon and countries of the region, including Togo, Nigeria, and Ghana. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaounde.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Heavy gunfire has erupted in Sudan's capital as security forces close off streets and attempt to clear protesters who have been calling for the establishment of democracy for the last 2 months. Algeria's Constitutional Council has cancelled the July 4th presidential election after rejecting the candidates. And Cameroon has increased troops around its lone oil refinery after a weekend explosion caused the shutdown of the facility. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Senator Bob Menendez, the ranking member of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee, was joined by prominent senators Lindsey Graham, Chris Murphy, and John Barrasso in sending a letter calling on President Donald Trump to publicly express support for a peaceful, negotiated resolution to the crisis in Libya. The senators urged Trump to encourage and support a ceasefire and engage in high-level diplomatic pressure to prod all sides to participate in a process that will lead to sustainable civilian-led transition in Libya. Mufta Al-Tayer, former Libyan ambassador to Mexico, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi about what the U.S. should and could do to earn Libyan popular support for a renewed involvement there.
There is a need for United States engagement in the Libyan crisis or Libyan file, and not to leave it only, for example, to the primary player at that time, France and Italy, and now Russia joined the game, in order to prevent a catastrophe. The United States can use its influence to speak clearly with the different parts, whether it is domestic, regional, or international. But what we need is clarity and transparency. The difference here is that the United States can bring to the table the different parties, bring them all together face to face and listen to them, and then based on that we move forward. Also, there is a question now raised in the Libyan circle. If we succeeded in somehow a ceasefire, for example, and the Libyan National Army withdrew from Tripoli, how can we deal then with the armed militia that's left in Tripoli? There is a fear, and legitimate fear, that we are maybe facing repentance to the Syrian experiment. We don't want to repeat it. And the Syrian representative to the United Nations said officially that there are ISIS fighters traveling from Syria to Libya.
The senator said in their letter there is no military solution in Libya, but U.S. allies like Egypt and United Arab Emirates are supporting General Haftar's military campaign, while Turkey and Qatar are backing the government of National Accord. Can the U.S. stop the regional players from adding fuel to fire in Libya?
Everybody is saying that there's no military solution to problem in Libya, but what we can see is that, in fact, more fuel added to the fire, and from both parties. They are receiving armament and financial aid from both sides. For example, Turkey publicly, without any fear of precautions or any punishment, sent armament to Tripoli. Now, the other side of this coin is that the Security Council of the United Nations three times failed to take a decision, for in this case, about Libya. We would like very much to see the United States and its major allies, plus Russia, to take an additional pressure on the nations and the countries that you mentioned. But also, in addition to that, we would like to also to let the Libyans, the men in Libya, the men and women in Libya, to let them feel that there is a solution, not just a wishful thinking. And this solution is capable of finishing the instability, finishing the armament chaos, the need to army and police. And also, there is a need to control, if not to finish, what is called in Libya, and everybody is saying, even people in Tripoli, the centralized government and administration in Libya. Also, the Libyans also would like very much to see an effort done to protect Libyan fortune inside and outside Libya. I believe that when the Libyans see that, they will support the United States, support its allies, and move forward.
That was Mufta Al-Tayer, former Libyan ambassador to Mexico, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. As Zimbabwe's economy struggles and the country faces scarce fuel supplies, an increasing number of businesses are refusing to accept the local currency, only taking U.S. dollars or charging an equivalent of it on the black market. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare that even some government departments and companies have started charging American currency.
Some businesses in Zimbabwe are refusing to accept the ever-weakening local currency, insisting on doing business in the US dollar. One reason is that the local currency, known as bond notes, are not accepted outside the Southern African country, making them useless for any companies that need to import goods. This spare vehicle parts seller, Tongai Madamombe, says he wants President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to switch to the US dollar as pricing in bond notes has become difficult. He says for those that do not import, charging in bond notes is not as difficult as it is for us who import. If you do not calculate well, you will fail to restock. We are really in difficult times, so we are now pricing in US dollars. Those who do not have it, we use parallel markets, as we will go there to get foreign currency to import our stock. Zimbabwe abandoned its dollar more than a decade ago when hyperinflation made it worthless. Now the bond notes introduced 2 years ago are also depreciating in value. South African rand and British pounds are acceptable in many places, but very difficult to find. Even some Zimbabwe government departments and companies such as the National Railways have started asking for payment in US dollars as part of efforts to protect themselves against the depreciating bond notes. Fuel is another scarce product in Zimbabwe, and the government continues to control its price. Some companies have resorted to selling it in US dollars only. Eddington Mazambani, the head of the Zimbabwe Energy Regulatory Authority, says it is only allowing fuel companies that have directly imported fuel on their own to trade in US dollars, as the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe pays foreign currency for most fuel imports in the country.
We require documentation. If you have procured it through Reserve Bank, obviously you fail to produce documentation to us, and we'll then take the necessary measures. You would be breaking the law, so we'll take necessary measures according to the laws in the petroleum sector.
The government says gas stations trading in US dollars when they are supposed to take local currency are being stripped of their licenses. But so far, that policy has not made fuel more available or stopped the practice. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an examination of the presidential elections in Malawi and South Africa. Peter Mutharika and Cyril Ramaphosa both won. But do their victories reflect the will of the people? The power of incumbency on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, I'm Susan Yawkey of VOA's International Edition. VOA's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of some of the world's greatest experts on international issues. But you don't have to tune in at broadcast time. Listen when you want. Just go to voanews.com. Click the Programs tab and scroll down to International Edition.